I think it was actually healthy for the industry, like to do this reset, so every vendor, every company, and every even like data team, they would think about, okay, what actual value we create, and how we can, deliver on that value, and is there actually value that, can justify the existence of the tool or existence of the team doing something. It obviously led to some kind of ideas that, oh, maybe we have too many vendors in the space, right, doing so many tools. I think that's kind
Definitely.
of my feeling, that the sentiment is going to continue at least in the next year, because to reach the point where like some consolidations will happen in the clear categories would say, oh, that's a standalone category, and there are like 1 to 3 leaders in that category. So like we'll see a little bit more, like I feel like going from a chaos of multiple vendors to a little bit more structured market, that was it has been happening, and I feel like it's going to continue to happen.
Hello, and welcome to Coffee with Coalesce, a monthly podcast about all things data and the trends in technology transforming our industry. I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO of Coalesce, and here with me is my co-founder and CTO, Satish Jayanthi. Together, we'll be your host for the next hour.
What's up, everybody? Why don't we get started? I'm really excited about having two very special guests on today from a company called Cube. If you haven't heard of them, you should. And we're about to talk about why. But before we do, let's just start with some quick introductions. My name is Armand Petrosian, CEO, co-founder at Coalesce, and I'll be your host with my co-founder. I'll let you introduce yourself, and then we'll pass it off to the Cube guys.
All right. Hey, guys. I am Satish Jayanthi, co-founder, CTO at Coalesce.
Awesome. Armand, Satish, thank you for having us today. Hi, everyone who is joining us right now. I'm very, very excited to be here today. My name is Artem. I am co-founder and CEO of Cube. I started Cube as an open source project with Pavel about 6 years now. I can't believe time flies, but again, I'm super excited to be here today with you.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm Pavel. I'm co-founder and CTO at Cube. And yeah, thanks again for inviting us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm kind of jealous that you three got the chance to meet in person last week. I was flying out to Berlin. So this is not a coffee day for me. It's 7 p.m. So I probably should avoid some espresso, but I'll be drinking water. So I've got some questions for you, both of you, that I'm really curious about. We always love to hear about the founder story and the founding origins of a company. And so you touched on it a little bit, Artem, but you guys were founded over 6 years ago, started as an open source project, but how did it all come to be?
Yeah, we have a small backstory before the 6 years ago even. So I'll probably start it, and I will pass it to Paul at some point. I think it was 2016 or so. And you remember like Slack was growing like crazy. Everyone was talking about Slack. If you go on TechCrunch, you read about Slack every day. And they had this big vision of becoming like an operating system for work. Yeah. And I used Slack a lot, and I was running engineering at a company that was building software for kids and schools. And I had this like engineering team using Slack all day. Essentially, everything was like Slack based. We were big believers in Slack. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what if we bring data into Slack, kind of having like a BI tool or like a Slack bot that can show you charts, maybe dashboards, but also answer, any natural language questions. And it was all before LLMs, just for the context. And I kind of built that application. I called it StatsBot. I built it as a side project right in Slack. So what it was doing, essentially, it was like getting data from multiple places, putting it into like some warehouse, and then giving you access in Slack to this data. Right? Think about a BI right in Slack. Mm-hmm. People started to use it. It got super popular. Pavel was one of the first users. Somehow he found it on internet, and we met. And what happened is that at some point Slack decided that they wanted to build application directory. We now know all it's here, right? We install apps from application directory, but it was a moment where the when I initially built StatsBot, it was really like a hackish way to install it. Like you need to copy a token, put it in somewhere, was no application directory. But then Slack wanted to come up with application directory. And they had always like chicken and egg problem, right? With all these marketplaces. Like if you launch an application directory, you need to have something inside that application directory, right? You need apps inside of it. And so they reached out to a few apps developers and including myself, and they said, like, we know StatsBot is already popular in our community. We wanted to feature you on this application directory. So they featured me during the launch. I got a lot of like users, traffic. My servers were not like doing well. Like the context, like it was Ruby on Rails, which does not scale well. And it's like, and I was like, Pavel kind of chatting with me, and I was like, Pavel, can you just give me a hand? You know, like I really need some like good engineering help, kind of help me to run this. So he joined. We got like more users, you know, like we all got excited about it. We started VCs reaching out, and we thought like, let's give it a try, you know, like focus on it full time, quit our jobs. And we raised a small pre-seed round and just kept building. So we built a team of, or okay, maybe like a small team, 10 people or so, kept building. But I think the issue we ran with StatsBot, and it was like issue and opportunity at the same time. Issue was that Slack never became like a big, you know, like it didn't replace Google Docs and didn't replace Microsoft Word. It just still a good corporate messenger, right? Mm-hmm. So our application was inside Slack. So that was kind of, was not big enough for it to be a venture story because we were limiting our addressable market. But at the same time, because we built a BI, we built the semantic layer because every BI needs it. And we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, but every BI needs a semantic layer, right? So we kind of built our own semantic layer, which apparently a lot of people liked. They liked, you know, the configuration, how to use it, all of this. And many of our users, they wanted to use it standalone, kind of just run a semantic layer and expose like API so they can do like their own thing, right? Build their own front end, their own visualizations. And Pavel and I, we got excited about it. Like, we thought like, yeah, that's a great use case. Let's do that. And we open sourced it. And I will let Pavel tell the rest of the story why we decided to open source it. But that's how we went from StatsBot to Cube.
I also want to know from you, Pavel, what were you doing beforehand when you stumbled upon StatsBot?
Let me just talk about a little bit of a prequel to the story. Like there was like, this is like 2016 year. And before that I spent at this point, probably let's say something like 12 years already in enterprise software development. I was building a lot of BIs from scratch, embedding in the like different ERP system, all custom built, all consulting gigs. At some point I understood that's so like from technical perspective, I already at the like very high level, there is no evolution in there. And that's the point where I decided to move into like product development. Basically, I tried to join some startup teams. I also tried to do my own thing. And then I realized, all right, I need a like great founding team. And that's where we met with Artem. And yeah, so the servers were crashing and I thought, all right, so I can help here and see how it goes. Like basically that was the point really. And so I guess that was 2016 and 3 years in 2019. So we were building still a bot, but then at some point we understood, all right, so we're actually building a lab technology. And that's all right. I built already lab technology in the past. So I'm building it like for 12 years. And we thought, all right, so can we do it like really this time? Take a really different like angle on that, really from the perspective of it would be open source because there is not much of really decent OLAP technology, open source OLAP technology on the market. So basically OLAP engines, right? And that's the point. What if we do it open source and see how it goes? Because it was unique at this point of time. It's still unique to some degree. And I think once we did this decision, it took off immediately because there was like really big gap. And we started like with the embedded use case, which was at that time like really obvious, and it's still like big decent chunk of our users is still embedded analytics, right? And nice. Eventually it evolved very mature like OLAP technology, which like can be a centerpiece for like all of your analytical data access within an organization.
Got it. That's great. And how do you two, I'm always curious, how do you two split up your responsibilities now? You've obviously grown a ton since those early days. What is the founder dynamics or co-founder dynamics now between you two look like?
I mean, we split it very, very, you know, like, I wish it would be different, but Pavel's in fun part, product and engineering, and I have to do the rest.
Okay, fair enough. That's kind of similar to Satish and I, but I find it fun. So I enjoy all the go-to-market stuff. Getting out there.
I do enjoy it too, though. But I feel like a product
passions
is always more fun. Yeah.
Your passions with the tech. That's awesome. I love that. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why you guys have built such an awesome product. So, congrats. You know, one other cool thing about your business just recently was that you announced a Series B. What was the funding round planned to be used for? Satish mentioned he met quite a few people at your guys' recent event that are new hires. But what was the thinking behind how the funding was going to be used?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, like Cube started as an open source project, and the first two rounds of funding we raised, we were like actually only rewards only open source project, right? When we raised a seed round, when we raised a Series A, it was only like open source. We were still trying to figure out how the go to market would look like. And probably between Series A and like a Series B, that's where like we were going through that process and try to understand, you know, like from a commercial traction, right? Like how our go to market look like. And it's less about, you know, like all the, what kind of salespeople you hire and all of this. That's more like a downstream, right? Like the big question was like product market fit, right? Like who needs a semantic layer? What kind of organization needs a semantic layer? Like is semantic layer good for this like a small company out of Menlo Park? Probably not, right? It probably make more sense for different type of the companies. So that's what, like a things that we questions we wanted to try to answer, and I believe we really did a good job. We answered these questions. And then once we felt like, okay, we know what needs to be done, like we know exactly, we have a plan, we have a strategy, and then we went and raised that round exactly to execute on this strategy and to build a go-to-market engine.
That's a perfect segue, because let's get into the meat of it. I think that there is a lot of talk around semantic layers right now. It's a popular concept, but I think for the audience, anybody listening in, and even myself, it would be so helpful to hear how you define what is a semantic layer to you and Pavel. And I've got other follow-up questions, but let's just start there. Like what is a semantic layer?
Yeah. And I'm happy to answer that question. And I'm obviously, as you can imagine, I kind of tell that story all the time.
I'm sure. Yeah, definitely.
I usually start with a little bit history, kind of like, you know, like what data stack looked like, you know, like in 90s or early 2000s. So if you look back, you know, like in more like OG, you know, like analytics, like we all had like this big integrated systems, right? Like, you know, like from vendors like Microsoft, Oracle, IBM. So you would buy like a big integrated system with like ETL, data prep, BI, OLAP, cubes, everything kind of in it integrated. And a semantic layer was always a part of that. Semantic layer, if you think about it, it's like that layer in the stack that translates your business kind of metrics into the underlying queries to the sort of like storage layer, right? So when a user drags and drops like revenue, you know, like per state in country, right? Grouped by time. So the system needs to know, okay, what does it mean, right? Like what kind of, like how I actually take that metric, I need to do one calculation here, second calculation here, and then, you know, like do some mathematical operations on top of these two data sets and then group by this time dimension. So all of this kind of logic, how exactly it needs to be done, what are the rules? And in different industries, they have all different metrics, right? Like healthcare have a set of specific metrics, finance. So all this metric, they need to be encoded somewhere. So that's usually like semantic layer, right? Sometimes people, especially in like earlier days, they called it OLAP cubes because that's where technically all the calculations were happening, in OLAP cubes. So that was always a part of this data stack. And now what happened with this data stack, it was not like very data, I would say, consumer friendly. It was very labor intensive. People wanted better tools. As you remember, it was like movement, democratize data, make it self-serve, right? A lot of different BI came out, you know, like they try to be more user friendly. And in fact, I think they are more user friendly. And a lot of people started to use more different tools for different categories in the data, and many, many different BI tools. So now if you look at the organization, when I talk to, you know, like large enterprises, I ask them, what BI tool do you use? They always answer all of them. That's like 100% answer to from all like bigger enterprises. They truly use a lot of things, a lot of BI tools. But the thing with semantic layer that it didn't go anywhere. It's still in the BI layer. It's like, because BI needs a semantic layer. So what effectively happening is that if you have five BI tools, you have five semantic layers. Now, if you think about it, okay, I have five semantic layers, different systems, different framework, different limitations and workarounds.
Yeah.
How my data team, is it even possible to make it in sync? It's like, you need to get a certification in this tool, certification in that tool, you know, like you need really to understand how system works. And then like, always going in like between all the systems and trying to make sure they all in sync. And that's a problem. Right. And it leads to inconsistency. Inconsistency essentially leads to people not trusting the data. So when you think about this world, and it's you know, like getting worse and worse as more tools we have. And that's why I think people started to really talk about semantic layers maybe like 5 years ago, right? Or so, because we got to a point where we started to have so many different tools. Mm-hmm. An idea is to not reinvent semantic layer, but make it universal. That's why we call our category universal semantic layer. So instead of having five semantic layers, idea is to just take data modeling out of BI layer, take metrics definition out of BI layer, and put them into universal semantic layer. So in that data stack, you would have, you know, like all your data load in Snowflake, run, you know, like your tool guys Coalesce to like transform all the data to like a good kind of, you know, like a gold layer, and then put a cube on top of that as essentially like a metrics platinum layer, right? And then connect all the BI tools to cube, right? And then like they don't need to, you know, like define LOED calculations or Tableau, like a LookML and Looker, right? You can define all the metrics in cube.
That makes sense. And so in other words, you've got large companies, big enterprise that, like you said, have got every BI tool, and each BI technology has their own semantic layer version of it. But once you've got three, four, or five of them, it kind of defeats the purpose of having separate semantic layers. You want to consolidate it in one place so everybody's speaking the same language. And
exactly,
in simplest terms, it helps govern certain metrics for a business. So revenue is the same definition, or is defined the same for every department, regardless of who's asking. And that is where Cube comes into play. Cube governs that, confirms it, validates it, and gives all the BI users one place to tap into to make sure that they can feel confident with a metric, whether that is revenue, whether that's inventory, whether that's something else. That's where Cube serves your customers.
Under the hood, I believe that it acts as a translation engine, right? I mean, you're saying from an end user, hey, get me this metric, but that requires a lot of SQL and optimized SQL to run behind the scenes and maybe do a lot of aggregations, calculations, because the physical data is stored in a physical table or view or so on. So it does, that technology is the key on the other side. From one side, from the business side, it's the governance standard, accuracy, you know, one source of truth. But on the technology side, the hard part is, how do I translate that into a query, run it, get the data all the time in an optimal manner? So that's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. And that's something our SQL API does. While we are actually like providing this SQL API compatibility, and many people think we are like we're engine, and to some extent we are. However, most of what we do, we actually like push down all the SQL to the data warehouses for execution. And there is some like cache and clear on top of it, which comes along. Yeah. And that allows us to still be like really like just a translation layer for all of those definitions back to your data warehouse. And yeah, obviously, if there is a like performance issue, we can solve it using like our cache and clear. But yeah, still, we are this semantic layer is a whenever. It's basically the storage for all of your question that can be done within an organization, governed by a single layer, which does it consistently on a data modeling, caching, and security levels.
Yeah, I love the positioning of a universal semantic layer. It makes a ton of sense versus a semantic layer being specific to any one technology. I think the, like I said, that to me conceptually, that just defeats the purpose. Like if you don't have something that's taking that universal approach across different categories and technologies, then it's not going to be as valuable to the company, and it can probably still lead to inconsistencies. So that's awesome. I understand you guys recently had an event. Like I said, I was jealous. I wasn't there in person, but you had your event Cube roll up a couple of days ago. Satish was there and had a great time. So I was going to ask you, Satish, what was the best part to you about being there in person with not just Artyom and Pavel, but the rest of the team and some prospects and different companies? What was your favorite part?
Yeah, it's a tough question. and here's why. I mean, I know you guys said this is your first time doing this event. It felt like you guys are pros. I mean, you have done it so nicely, every part of it. My highlights, I would say, the panel discussion was amazing. And the networking part, you had your customers, you know, people who are like prospects who are trying it and they want to understand what it is. And then you have people who are like partners and, of course, experts from the field. You know, Corey Johnson, who was on the panel, I believe Josh from Snowflake, I forget his last name, but he was there. And Francesco, who was amazing as well on this. He's very opinionated and he's got his ideas, but they're pretty, pretty valid and awesome. So the panel was very interesting. The networking aspect to it is great. And the sessions, individual sessions, they talk about semantic layer, how, again, these questions, but much more detail. What are they solving? When do you need a semantic layer? You know, what are the current problems and how do that resolve? So that's all very informational. Now I believe you guys have released a new version on live, and hats off to you, Pavel, to do that live. Like they were on the stage releasing a new version.
That's awesome.
Hats off. I would never do that.
Yeah. Never tested it. It was 50-50% chance it would play. Somehow work.
That's amazing.
That was amazing. And I believe you guys, I would like to know more, you know, for the audience to talk, for you to talk about the features. Like, you know, you had Copilot, you have like, you know, MDX support and pre-calculations, things like that. Can you kind of talk about those features that you have released as part of this new release?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Do you
go for it.
Oh, okay.
No, go for it.
So I think the most exciting ones, so we released is release of Tesseract. And that's something we've been thinking for a long time, actually since the inception of the Cube. And if you know the history of the Cube, it's actually started as a like Node.js project, but eventually over time we added much more Rust. Right now it's mostly Rust-based like repo, right? And the reason for that is mostly like performance and the strictness we need to have in order to like cover everything with this test and like basically the type of, I would say, type of quality assurance we need to ensure, so for the code base. So those are the main drivers we went with the Rust. And the Tesseract, this is a Rust version actually of a like heart of a cube, which is a data modeling engine. And we released like just the first version in a preview, which is would be just a SQL planner for now. And eventually like remaining pieces of data modeling will be there, such as data compilation and like SQL evaluation. Mm-hmm. So so I think this is the big one. Again, that's just the one part of reasoning why we did the Tesseract. Another one is like more like a business problem. If you ever thought about if you're familiar of engines like MDX or DAX, you probably know like there is an engine that is called like Cell Engine that works under the hood of those like basically technologies. And Cell Engines foundationally different from the SQL engines. They don't work the way you usually evaluate in the SQL. Like in the SQL, you evaluate tables, and for the Cell Engine, evaluation happens in a cells, more like an Excel spreadsheet, right? And that has a lot of performance implications, which has led actually declining of our OLAP cube technology back in the days. Actually, that was the main reason. But on the other hand, the cool piece of it, you actually can do very, very complex calculations in very compact form. And that's a feature we are bringing with the Tesseract, which is called multi-stage calculations. That is more for more mature industries like financial organization, financial services, or like manufacturing stuff. So where a lot of let's say multi-level calculations should be done, and it should be pretty simple. And we believe there was this point by Francesca on the panel that data modeling was never born, actually. And there is some truth to this in a sense that there is actually, we are still in a phase where still so much can be done in terms of what can be simplified in terms of data modeling. And that's one of our main focuses right now. Yeah,
we definitely agree with that ourselves as well. I think it's one of the main reasons we exist as a company is to help make data transformations, data modeling being a component of that, as simple and approachable as possible, but also extensible. What about you, Artem? What on your roadmap or what announcements were you most excited about, if anything different there?
Yeah, I'm very excited about, you know, like every and each announcements we made, but I felt like, you know, like I always try to see like why we're doing this, right? Like why we do all these small pieces and where we go and what is the bigger picture. And to Pavel's point, I think we really, with Cube, we're in a business of helping build the semantic layer, helping build this data model, and then help to consume it, right? Just like at the end of the day, this two like business process and the people who are involved into this, right? So that's why I'm super excited about Tesseract, because it increases the level of complexity that we can address, right? Like especially in these enterprises, as we mentioned, financial services, healthcare, they have like the crazy metrics that you need to build it, like multi-stage calculation. So we really want to like make sure we as an engine can support all of these complicated use cases, so our customers, they don't need to think about, you know, workarounds and think hacks. They just can use, you know, like Cube as is, as a default standard data modeling engine. But on other hand, is that when I think about data modeling as a business process, I feel like a collaboration is really important. Is how do we help, you know, different personas work on a Cube data model? And then historically, Cube kind of started as a code first, because we're both engineers. We believe like code is great, you know, like, and you can put it under the version control. But as we started to work with more people, we understand that not everyone would prefer have, you know, write code. It's really like a lot of talent that like great data talent, but they just usually prefer to do like a drag and drop kind of build visual stuff. So we decided to meet, you know, like more like this type of the, you know, persona data analyst, helping them to build data models visually. So we released what we call a cube data model, like visual data modeler, to help build same data models, but more visually. And then finally, the thing I'm super excited about is more like a consumption layer, really, because you build a great data model, you collaborate it with different teams, it's all good. You need to bring it to users, right? Like, so we invest a lot into different like APIs, right? Like a SQL API for Tableau, DAX, MDX for Microsoft ecosystem. Microsoft ecosystem is like a big part of our roadmap, of course. And then like a lot of like work with AI, which is like I'm super excited about. It's like always early and like unknown territory to some extent, is like how that's actually going to look like. But we're making some traction there as well. So like data consumption with BI tools, AI, and embedded analytics is very rich and interesting.
I would think that the semantic layer would be such an important prerequisite to doing anything AI or Gen AI, LLM related when it comes to actual data projects. Like Satish and I have talked about this. Satish, curious for your perspective there. I mean, you didn't mention any specific functionality that was most exciting to you, but what did you think coming out of the event from a product standpoint, and like what's most exciting to you about the potential for a cube?
Yeah, I mean, so you're looking at one problem that's obvious is because the semantic layers are built in multiple BI tools, they're embedded, that just creates inconsistency. So you're resolving that. That's like one problem. But right. I think there's much more beneficial things that come out of this, right? If you, and they go in detail in these presentations, but there's, and I have used in the past life, you know, semantic layers like Microsoft's analysis services or other things. Sometimes you can bring things much quicker to like as an endpoint for somebody to access it and play with it. It could be unstructured data, for example, and you may want to expose it. You don't know anything about it. You want to expose it. That's a quick way to kind of put that in the semantic layer so that it becomes this one layer to access anything that you want, whether it's curated, it's all clean, or you're saying, hey, here is an endpoint that you want to go ahead and start looking at it and give me feedback. It just becomes a central place to do that. And of course, you get a lot of these other benefits of maintaining these metrics in one place with versioning on it, descriptions on those, like what they mean. So it almost becomes your like part of your catalog. So that's another benefit. And the speed. This a SQL engine cannot beat an OLAP engine, period. Whether it's runtime or as you said, to do certain calculation, for example, year over year periods. If you want to find something like year over year, and if you want to write the SQL statement for that, it looks like 25 lines or something. In MDX, it's like just one thing, like one line. So these complex calculations can be simplified very, very quickly. And the speed at which you get the results, basically at speed of thought. So you run it, you get the result right away. So now exploration and discovery becomes very, very fast of this data. So there's this multiple benefits that I see with this.
Are there any favorite use cases that you both have seen in your customer instances or with the audience that you work with on Slack or anywhere? Like, is there anything that comes to mind where you think of like either an inspiring customer story or somebody who's doing something very cutting edge with Cube?
Well, if you want to go for it, I'm happy to share my examples, but I will let you do it first.
Yeah, you go first. I am my.
Overall, like before, like I go into like examples, right? Like I want to like from types of the use cases. They usually cube serves. We call it data experiences. So there are like a three categories, but we usually categorize it. We say embedded analytics. That's in many cases a customer kind of facing analytics. You know, like if you use any SaaS tool. In many cases, you can see kind of charts, you know, like about the usage. So that's like a big part of the Cube business. So we power customer facing analytics in many companies. There is a, it's so hard to pick my favorite one. I think they're like a Linux Foundation. Actually, it's more like, maybe like, cool. It's not a, like a commercial, like it's non-commercial yeah. organization. It's not huge, but it's pretty cool because like, if you wanted to like see analytics on top of this, like Linux Foundation open source projects, they have the yeah. website, which shows you, you know, like how many forks, stars, and all the GitHub activity, and it's all powered by Cube. So it's wow. like, it's a public facing because many, many our use cases embedded analytics, they're like behind, you know, like the closed doors. Obviously it's a B2B product, but this yeah. one is public. So I really like that one. And it's like, it's good, you know, like because it's open source spirit as well.
For sure.
That's pretty cool. The other use case is we do is usually BI and spreadsheets.
Yeah.
And here we now like do a lot of it, but I remember when we were like onboarding our first financial services customers and they like came to call and they started to talk about some, now Pavel can talk more about it, but it was like some crazy metrics calculations of data modeling or kind of analyzing risk. And I was like, I need really to invite Pavel on that call. It's like, it's getting over my head. Pavel joined and he was like, yeah, I know that stuff. I'll handle it. But that was crazy. You know, like when I saw like what kind of stuff Cube can handle from a complexity of the calculations, that yeah. was like amazing, you know, like, and they're like, that's great. And, you know, like finally AI use case.
Yeah.
AI is interesting because the foundational idea of the use case is that AI agents can generate SQL. We know that, right? Because they saw a lot of like SQL examples, but, the problem here is that they don't know like really anything about the data model, right? They don't know anything about the use case, the context. So they cannot generate the correct SQL that makes sense. So like semantic layer can do this. And we started experimenting on the AI with some of the customers. They really seen good results when they feeding their like data model to AI agents. And now they like can answer questions. They can go deep. They not only can kind of give you like this simple, like, oh, show me revenue by, you know, like by country. That's probably like every BI demo tool right now. But they can ask, what does it revenue mean, right? Like, how is it structured? What is the drivers of that growth? So like, because if the semantic layer, it's all like interconnected. It's all like a graph of, you know, ideas that LLM can read and understand and then kind of reason about the connections. So when I saw that part, I thought like, wow, that's really interesting now.
That's sweet. Anything you'd like to add there, Pavel?
Yeah, so... I think our team already touched on my favorite examples. Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess we cannot air their names yet, but it's like one of the top global banks. We have like in financial services. I basically learned like the whole like theory, like in this financial risk analysis. So like just to prepare the like those calculations. That was fun, and it's like yeah, it was great to see. So. We can handle the scale type of scale right. calculations, and then, yeah, one of the most sophisticated calculations I've seen people do with Cube.
That's cool.
That's very cool. As well as it's actually interesting to see. We also have 500 Fortune manufacturing company, and they're mm-hmm. like more like an IoT use case. And for me, the exciting part is that's where restoration. I don't think you can find any other tool which does that. But we handling for them all of their like scale, like terabyte data scale, in terms of like data handled with IoT as well as this like data complexity use cases. So and we always were like thinking about is this ever possible? Is this something like a single OLAP engine could do, and is this like required to be like within the space? And I feel this is something really people want, like a single like universal tool to like address all of those problems.
Yeah. Satish, were you gonna ask something?
Yeah, I was going to just a follow-up question. So you said you had these complex metrics. So your engine was translating that into SQL? Is that how you guys were able to do that?
Yeah, that's correct. So usually, so there are two modes of like operation for the cube. So it's either like total pass through. So we receive a query in like at one of our APIs, would be like REST API or SQL API or MDX, and convert this to OLAP representation plus some post-processing on top. And post-processing can happen either like in very simple cases, it can happen in memory of a cube, but in more complex cases, it would be pushed down to the like target data source. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, if there is a opt-in cache, so if users explicitly set the caching for this type of queries, like caching goes on top of that. So you can avoid accessing raw data in this case and go directly to cache.
Yep. Perfect.
Awesome. Cool. Okay, we got time for probably one more question. This is one that we so every year near the end of the year, we like to poll different thought leaders, founders, data visionaries, and ask them for their predictions. And we will also do a look back. So we'll look back on like, what were our predictions then in 2023? How accurate were we? How accurate were others? And so I've got to ask you both, what do you predict will be different or changed about the analytics industry in 2025 as a whole? And why?
Yeah, I can first, Pavel, you know, feel free to chime in here.
Cool.
I think what we like, feel like analytics industry is sort of like a roller coaster to some extent, you know, like sometimes like all high, it's all great. And then, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of go down a little bit, you know, like for us to make a reset. Sometimes it's, you know, like healthy, you know, like to be more reasonable about ourselves and kind of the tools we use and all of that. So I felt like, you know, it happened with Hadoop, you know, like Hadoop and big data, like in general,
definitely
when we were like that movement. And then modern data stack was like all hot, you know, like in 2021, you know, during COVID days. And then like last year and this year, you know, like it's kind of not entirely doom and gloom, but I felt like it close to it, right? Like to some extent, like a lot of sentiment, at least on, you know, like all the like thought leadership blogs, you know, like people read and they were like preaching not good days. And I felt like, you know, I think it was actually healthy for the industry, you know, like to do this reset, you know, like, so every vendor, every company, and every, even like a data team, they would think about, okay, what actual value we create, you know, like, and how we can, you know, like deliver on that value. And is there actually value that, you know, like can justify the existence of the tool or existence of the, you know, the team doing something. It obviously, you know, like led to some kind of, you know, like ideas that, oh, maybe we have too many vendors in the space, right? Doing so many tools. I think that's definitely kind of my feeling, that the sentiment is going to continue at least in the next year, because, you know, like till we reach the point where like some consolidations will happen and the clear categories would say, oh, that's a standalone category. And they're like 1 to 3 leaders in that category. So like, we'll see a little bit more like, I feel like going from a chaos of multiple vendors to a little bit more structured market, that was it has been happening, and I feel like it's going to continue to happen. On other hand, I think we'll start to see more of interesting production applications of AI in some tools. I feel like this may be like production grade application going to be a little bit not as cool as initially predicted 2 years ago. So we're probably going to start small. Like example, Copilot is a good, it's already been out, but I feel like more tools will get their Copilots. And yeah. When I tried Copilot, I know Pavel kind of using it, it's useful, it's great, but it doesn't feel like entirely magic. It's just like, it's like IDs, they always had this like kind of autocomplete feature, right? It feels like a better autocomplete feature right now. So like, I feel like many tools will get this AI powered improvements or better workflows, which are not going to look groundbreaking right now, but they would be a very good production grade use of AIs, and maybe unlock some improvements that would not be possible before.
Yeah, that makes sense. So basically, consolidation events across the modern data stack. I totally agree with you. Way too many vendors. I feel like the amount of funding that went into the MDS in 2021, 2022 is kind of what's going on with Gen AI right now. Yeah. And so that whole cyclical effect's happening. And then on the flip side, for people to just basically, everybody's going to have a copilot. 2025 will be the year of the copilot, would be the statement there. Pavel, anything on your end? What's our last prediction from you?
Yeah, I wanted, actually, Artem already touched, but I wanted to generalize it. It might be not happening next year, but on a panel we touched, roll-up panel, we touched the question of industry amnesia. It's actually, lab industry is actually pretty old, and all of those like terms we are discussing, like semantic layer, those existed like 30, even 40 years ago. So nothing new to that. And the thing is, it's actually, I would say, AI can fill this gap, and we might see rise of AI-assisted data engineering pretty soon, with agents coming in and agents like filling the gap of this memory, because it's not actually the people it's basically literacy question, right? Do you have a time to fill the gap of like 40 years in your head, right? And that's actually usually answer is not, and that's why we are keep reinventing the wheels around very foundational stuff in analytics. And AI assisted engineering can help fill this gap, actually.
Yeah, we had Bob Mugli on as a guest. I think he's one of the best technical visionaries. I would say he agrees with that and sees a ton of value in what you guys are doing too, as well as with us. So it's been awesome having you both as guests. Thanks for coming on. We're just at time. So appreciate you, gentlemen, Artem, Pavel, the co-founders of Cube. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. It was wonderful being here. Thank you for having us here.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again.